This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
His stick broke as he tried to clear it. He doesn't have one now, and Stevenson held in. Left point, Riker Evans with a shot. Redirected, they score! Ellie Tolvanen! Jared McCann left circle, into the slot. Stevenson missed it. Comes right point. Montour with a drive. He scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Garland in his own zone. Could you imagine two goalie goals on the same day?
I don't think that's ever happened.
Now here's a chance for the empty net. Tolvanen left wing into the Vancouver zone. Delays, shoots, scores! Ellie Tolvanen scores his second of the night into the open net. And Seattle leads 6-3.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks with another back-breaking loss. 1-4 on this road trip. Lose 6-3 in Seattle against the Kraken. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to bring in Dan Riccio into the conversation, calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor tonight. A rough one in Seattle. And it's been a rough road trip for the Vancouver Canucks. And a common theme, losing leads. They had a 2-1 lead, a 3-2 lead, and end up losing 6-3 in Seattle. And you can get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. In a different year, Bick, going 1-4 on a road trip like this could have put you out of the playoff race, but because of the Western Conference Turtle Derby for the Wild Card 2 spot, the Canucks still get to hang around, but they are not looking convincing at all.
No, and the thing that they've been able to rely on this year, where we talked so much in the first half of the season, was, well, how come they couldn't win at home, but they can win on the road? And here comes this road trip after the Four Nations break. 1-4. 1-4 on this road trip. And, you know, we always knew the second half of the season was going to get tough, either with volume of games. There's another Eastern trip still to come. But the road success has completely dried up. They're still on the right side of the ledger, 16-12-4, but you know, that's 16 wins in 32 attempts, right? It's tough.
Yeah. It really is rough, right? And the Canucks, again, they're around the playoff race, so to speak, but not looking convincing at all. And if it wasn't for it being a turtle derby, teams are on pace for 88, 90 points in that wild card spot run. It's just barely over 500, and that's why they're in the race. And in a different year with teams playing well, could already been good night for the Canucks. Let's welcome in Dan Riccio into the conversation. And Reach, good job calling the game tonight, stepping in on a Saturday night. But, you know, it was a promising first 20. The Canucks did a lot of good things well early, but as soon as things started conspiring against them, they fell apart.
It's a similar script that we've seen through this road trip, right? A good start for the team, unable to really hang on to it, and the rest of the game is what it is. I mean, what's troubling here is they're now giving up a lot of goals. The defensive zone coverages here tonight for a team that's supposed to be built on their defensive game, that was not it tonight. Sure, they didn't give Seattle a ton, but the chances they did give them were great. I mean, that go-ahead goal, how long are you going to give a player the opportunity to set up and set himself up for the tip in front of your goaltender? Not following your player, your man, off of a faceoff like we saw with Pettersson on the Beniers game-tying goal. I mean, these are just things that we didn't see this team do at all last year, and on this road trip, certainly these last two games, they've become kind of a common occurrence of how they've just botched some of their coverages, whether it's on the rush or tonight in the defensive zone.
Well, just in general, Reach, like, at any point, once they trailed here 4-3, did it feel like, okay, this is the 3-5-6 minute stretch where they can start mounting pressure and flip the script here? I'm hard pressed to think of any sort of sequences of plays here in the third.
You don't have a player that's going to turn the game.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't. We talked about this yesterday. It's just who on your confidence ranking is going to come over and take over this game? If Quinn Hughes is on the bench for the final, what, nine-plus minutes of this third period, there's literally nobody that I have a ton of confidence in to make a game-breaking play. Maybe Philip Hedl. He showed a little bit of that tonight. Elias Pettersson, we know, is not that guy. I mean, Brock Besser has a chance on that three-on-two opportunity, and he flips the puck to Pettersson, who's going through with the middle drive but doesn't have a stick on the ice. There's just there's nobody that gives you a ton of confidence that they can make a play, make a game-breaking type of play. It's like you're waiting for Tyler Myers to streak through the neutral zone and blast a 100-mile-an-hour clapper to see if that's going to break through Joey Decord. There's just there's not enough here right now.
No, and you know the one saving grace or one of the saving graces has really been Quinn Hughes. And tonight, not only did he have a rough night by his standards defensively in his own zone and with the turnover that led to the first goal of this game as well, but he did not play the final 9 minutes of this hockey game tonight. He looked in distress physically, didn't skate as well as he usually does, looked tentative in board battles, was slow getting up, left the bench for a while. Clearly, whatever is ailing him, believed to be an oblique injury, is nowhere near healed enough, and this was the roughest he's looked since coming back from his injury reach.
Yeah, I guess we know now that there was no chance he was playing in that Four Nations final, right?
Right. Yeah, no kidding.
We could put that debate to bed about Quinn Hughes potentially playing in that final. I mean, you know, one of the things, I didn't see any numbers on it or anything like this. I don't have it in my prep, but I can't remember a game where Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek were on the ice together for three goals against. And that's something that happened on this night. And you even saw it the other night against Anaheim, some of their D-zone coverages, how much it clearly pains Hughes to have to work through in the defensive zone to check guys in the defensive zone right now. And there was that one of the goals, I think it might have been the Beniers goal, where he falls to the ice after the goal and he's slow to get up, slow to get back to the bench. It's just clearly very difficult right now for the captain. You hope that a couple of days off here before Wednesday's game against Anaheim is going to be enough, because, you know, for as much as the Canucks don't look and don't feel like a playoff team, especially with the results, you're still hanging on to the final spot here in the Western Conference because, as you mentioned, Sad, it's a bit of a turtle derby. And if you're going to win this turtle derby, you're going to need your captain to get back to as close to 100% as he possibly can.
Not that we like don't know what's going to happen here in this next week, right? Like each result kind of reinforces what should be done here. But I'm just looking at our text inbox here, and the two words that are coming up the most here, Reach, sell and lottery. And here you are at the start of March, and those aren't too encouraging words to hear when we're at this stage of the season.
No, and look, lottery isn't really in the cards, right? I mean, you're still 20-plus points. For all those fans that want to see the Canucks maybe tank for whatever the best draft pick is that they can possibly get, you're still closer to the playoffs than you are to any kind of a relevant percentage point in the lottery rankings. So no thank you on that. I'd rather see this team make it to the playoffs. I'd rather see this team have to fight through some of those pressure moments, because I do still think that those are growing moments for whatever is going to be left here beyond this summer and what could be a summer of change. I understand, but it's hard because you're seeing a team that you expect to be a lot better than it is continue to struggle, continue to fall below your expectations. And when that happens, you're going to get a lot of these thoughts that a lot of our listeners have. A lot of them are lamenting on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. It's just as tough a moment as we've seen in the Rick Tocchet era. And as much as you feel like it might be rock bottom, with each passing game, it seems to get a little bit worse. And that's where we are here at the end of this road trip.
Yeah, and I mean, we're seeing a lot of, you know, fans like Fish Stance were saying, shut down Houston PD, sell Brock, Puce, and Carson, fire up the draft lottery simulator, tank all the way, because even getting to the playoffs, they'd be embarrassed by the Winnipeg Jets. And that's just the level of confidence fans have right now for the rest of the season. And, you know, as far as the trade deadline, it's coming around, you know, by Friday next week. And we know the Canucks are going to be active, looking to find ways to improve their team long term more than short term. But I wouldn't put it past them to do something short term here. I mean, you know, for all this talk about, you know, we would rather see them maybe turn the page and move forward, I'm not sure the organization is ready to punt on the season like a lot of fans want to see.
Well, it's hard to punt on the season when you're in a playoff spot, but slapping a Band-Aid on this thing isn't going to help it a ton, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, whatever you're going to – if there isn't a big acquisition, you know, what we keep talking about it. This team is missing game breakers. Your captain, the best defenseman in the league, is currently hurt. He's trying to play through it as best he can, but it's obviously keeping him from being able to play at the level this team needs him to play at. And then there's Elias Pettersson. You're not going to go out and be able to acquire a game-breaking player. I don't know what trading a third or fourth round pick for another winger might be able to do to help this team. Like, if you were the ones to pay the second round pick today for Gustav Nyquist, is that solving any of these issues for the Canucks? Is Gustav Nyquist making that much of a difference? Maybe it gives you an extra win over the course of the season, maybe two. Sure, maybe that helps you win the Turtle Derby, but I'm not interested in paying to slap a Band-Aid on this thing right now. I for as much as, yes, playoffs, as I just mentioned, are something that you can still build from and still have valuable learning experiences in, you know, you can't do it at the cost of long-term help. And maybe that third or fourth round pick is more helpful to you in the summer in some other kind of trade. But I don't know. I don't necessarily see it, because to me, what this team needs is a star player to play like a star player. And that's not going to happen by slapping a Band-Aid on this with some kind of trade for a rental player.
Yeah, you know, we'll get into some of the trade stuff a bit later on. I do think there might be a way for them to, by the deadline, maybe get a couple of guys as rentals cheap on the final minutes, like we saw last year where teams were just trying to offload salary. But that's not going to be, you know, the difference-making, needle-moving player anyways. You're just talking about just helping around the edges. And, you know, I thought Filippito tonight, again, dangerous, right? Had good moments, scored a goal. But I think what you're really missing since the Canucks traded JT Miller, and hey, the Canucks felt they had to do what they had to do, and I don't think this was about choosing JT or Pettersson. Again, Pettersson might be gone as well. I don't think this was about that, but nonetheless, JT's no longer here. And I think in a game like this, like, you're really missing that real true driver that can put up points. And yes, he has defensive deficiencies, but they're really missing that guy. Like, he really was the engine of their offense forward-wise, and they've just been missing that.
They've been missing. I think it's probably the playmaking ability, almost more than anything. I mean, the vision JT had, obviously, you know, like, think about it this way. Right now, you don't have Hughes playing at the level we expect or we've come to know of Quinn Hughes because of the injury. So your best playmaker in the lineup is not there. Pettersson is what he is. And on top of that, you've lost Miller. So your three top providers are all essentially out of the lineup or incapable of playing to the best of their abilities right now. So you're not seeing a lot of guys get set up for great chances. You're seeing a lot of what we saw in the third period where you have to throw a puck to the net and have a bunch of guys slam away at it and hope that it finds a way to get past the goal line, which obviously in this case it did not. You don't have players with a great vision that can break a game open with a pass or something to that effect when you don't have, with all three of those guys, as I just mentioned, either not in the lineup, traded away, or not being able to play at the best of their ability.
Amidst so many other concerns, you know, the mental aspect of this game here, like, they had two leads and they give up unanswered goals. And these unanswered goals have happened here recently, right? Like a string of multiple games here where teams have totaled 3, 4, or 5 unanswered goals against the Canucks. And like it's the unwillingness, I guess, to, you know, and Rick Tocchet said it as well in the pregame with Batch of, you know, having someone like take ownership of the idea of like, hey, it's starting to slip. Now my line has to go be the one to stop it. And you see sequences like these unanswered goals. It adds to the host of problems.
Well, they had the moment with the Joshua goal. Like, it felt like maybe, to me, that felt like the moment in tonight's game where it's like, okay, 2-2, bit of a lucky goal that the Kraken scored there to tie the game with Bjorkstrand. And then a couple minutes later, they get a power play. You think maybe this is where the Kraken take the lead. Instead, you know, Connor and Joshua connect for that go-ahead goal again and make it 3-2. And I felt, okay, this is a moment you can build off of, but instead it continues to go the other way. And I don't know what it's been in these second periods, but you gave up 3 to Anaheim in the second the other night. You follow that up with another 3 spot given to Seattle in this one. It's really disheartening. And that's the kind of thing that just this team has really not shown an ability to bounce back. A way too often term used in sports, a similar resilience to what they showed last year to be able to fight against the pressure that's coming down on them. But it's not a trait that this team currently has for whatever reason. And maybe it's some of the leaders that have gone out the door, and Ian Cole at the end of the day, for whatever reason, they're unable to do it. And they've shown it time and time again. They've given up countless leads. They gave up leads in each of their last 3 games, even the LA game, even though they end up winning it in overtime. They give up the 2-goal lead in the third period there. This Seattle team, in all 3 games against the Canucks this year, have come back on Vancouver. They came back on December 28th for 4-1 down, less than 5 minutes in the game. They score 3, send it to OT, and win it in OT. The other game, they're down 3-1 in the third. They score 2 on the Canucks, force that one into overtime. Canucks end up winning it in a shootout. Like, this is a trait of this team. This is a habit of this team to keep giving up these leads and not be able to fight back against the pressure. I'm sure Rick Tocchet is everywhere looking for answers, but, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to these players on the ice to be able to stop the snowball once it starts growing on them.
Well, you know, to that point, New West Nick says this team is so fragile mentally and it's inexcusable at a professional level. And we've seen the fragility on this road trip. And we saw it on a lot of home games as well, where they fell apart and lost a lot at home, some bad games where they weren't in it at all and the home fans were left dissatisfied significantly. We saw that quite a bit. And we'll see what the reception is going to be here on Wednesday when the Canucks are back home to take on the Anaheim Ducks.
It's a great point, because I don't think it's going to be encouraging.
No, I'm not sure what it's going to be, because, like, I mean, the games, you know, haven't been fun and interesting. And tonight, you know, there was a 4-3 game heading into the third. Lots of goals, could have been fun, but then another, you know, meltdown again, and now you're losing 6-3. It's just hard to be engaged as a Canucks fan, and I'm seeing a lot of that right now. It's a lot of fans who are saying they're done watching this team right now, and I think that could create a really interesting mood here at Rogers Arena when they come back home.
Well, you've got 7 of the next 8 games on home ice. If you've ever had a moment to solidify your playoff spot or your position in the playoff race, now would be it. Now, it's not the easiest of stretches against teams, but there are teams below you in the standings that you've got on this upcoming stand. So you've got Anaheim, then Minnesota, Dallas, Montreal. That's 2 teams on the outside of the playoffs looking in. You've got a game in Calgary on the second half of a back-to-back. That's one obviously going to be big, but you've also got Chicago and Utah as part of those 7 home games through the next 8. So there's 8 points against teams below you, actually 10 if you want to include Calgary, 10 points available to you in the next 8 games against teams below you in the standings. I mean, these are ones, if you want to be serious about getting into the playoffs, these are games you have to have. These are games that your home fans I mean, we've already seen the Boo Birds out a couple of times this year. They're not going to welcome more of these laid eggs on home ice against teams below you in the standings.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Reach. But good job calling the game tonight alongside Batch. Enjoy tomorrow off, and we'll see you on Monday.
Cheers, boys.
That is Dan Riccio, and that was your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Hybrid with rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. We have a lot of reaction on a text inbox, and you know, a lot of it is this, like from the G-Man. Stick a fork in this team, absolutely brutal. And you know, again, like the Canucks are in a playoff spot. They're 1 point up on the Calgary Flames. But that doesn't give you solace because of how they play. They're 1-4 on this road trip. The Blues have won, so now they're a bit closer. They allowed Utah to close the gap. They allowed Anaheim to kind of get itself back into the playoff race here for that wild card spot. So the Canucks are still there, but in terms of the standings and their point projections, but there's so many teams now that are closing that gap. And if you're looking at form and if you're looking at which team can seize the moment and seize that opportunity, the Canucks don't look like that team right now.
No, it's they're in their playoff spot by default more than anything,
yes.
Right? And we always talk about punching your ticket and all these things, but right now the Western playoff chase might be 89 points to get in. That's a tick above 500. And teams that do that, like they're not really threats in any which way. So, yeah, you can take comfort in the fact that you're in a playoff spot, but comfort is what you should be avoiding. You want to do uncomfortable things and push yourself to levels that you haven't been in. Every elite coach is talking about making players uncomfortable to achieve the best version of yourself. This team has talked about this and doing things like meeting pressure with pressure and all those buzz phrases, but those buzz phrases are meaningless if you don't translate it into peak performance. And they're a far cry from peak performance right now.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And trying to find that again with, you know, 22 games remaining on the season, there isn't a lot of runway here. And yeah, maybe the playoff bar is low, but that doesn't mean you're going to get to that bar anyway. So a lot of tough moments coming up. Jay from Fabled New West says, please stop with the playoff push. I'm praying this team is sellers, even a full-on rebuild. If that costs us 43, then so be it. We'll get a haul. And please don't say anything about rebuilds fail because we've been enduring since 2011 has been awful. Jay from the Fabled New West. Hey, listen, you can want that. That's all fine. All I'm saying is you go full on rebuild. Just be prepared. It's going to take the better part of the next decade. And I'm not saying don't do it necessarily, depending on what happens. And if Quinn forces the issue, if he doesn't want to be here long term, you're forced into it. There's nothing you can do about it. But it's you can kiss the next decade goodbye as far as competitive hockey goes. The better part of that decade. So, you know, it's been uninteresting generally since 2011, outside of a couple of years here and there. Could be another decade tacked on top of that as well. And that's what makes this so frustrating to watch, because people understand the stakes.
Yep. Tyler texting in, 650. This team has 27 wins in 60 games. Yeah,
that's
true.
That's rough, man.
That's the reality. And like that speaks to not necessarily punching your ticket to get in. It's just what the situation is currently in the West. And you have to remove the point total in the standings. We all can correctly or have our own honest assessments of what we believe what the team is, but I don't think anyone's sitting here saying like, oh, I believe that this team's got another layer still to come. They keep showing to you what they are this season, and that's why there's a lack of evidence of, like, we're not sitting here talking about this playoff push. It's just facts that they reside in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
That's all that is.
Exactly. It's just the realities of where they're at. You know, Travis Esquamish says the effort is there. The talent is not. Too soft, too small. Playing the Canucks is like a day at the spa.
I disagree that the effort is there. It's there in fleeting moments.
Yes.
We'll see periods of it. But do we see six? Like, again, the first period tonight, Kiefer Sherwood and Nils Höglander were two of the better forwards. Filipino was one of the better forwards in that first period.
But here's
did that sustain through the four periods? Did anyone else fill in the gap if those guys' efforts were going to drop at all?
Well, and here's one of these games where had the Canucks have had a decent road trip and played well, you could have looked at this and said, you know what, like it's the last game of this 5-game road trip,
let off
the
game.
Break.
Yeah,
you had the lead, you just ran out of gas. That's going to happen, you know. And you had a few unlucky bounces, but you played well the first 20. The effort was generally there, and then it fell apart. But hey, that happens at the end of a road trip. But when you had lost three games already on this road trip and you had already coughed up leads in this road trip, you couldn't afford to have another one like this. Like, this isn't acceptable because of what happened on the road trip as a whole. And you can even look at it tonight and say, well, offensively, you scored three goals. It created chances. It was the defense that let them down. Well, the defense has been holding them up essentially throughout this last stretch and giving them a chance, especially with Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek. And then one off night they have, they don't get bailed out. So it's one of those things where it's just one thing after another, and it all kind of falls apart, right? And they don't have guys picking each other up as a season goes on. And, you know, we see this a lot. You know, people are texting in, thank God they raised the season ticket prices. This one says it forced me to cancel, did me a favor. But you're increasing ticket prices, and we understand the economy is what it is, inflation, all that stuff, and every business is, you know, looking at these types of decisions. But you have to have a product to sell that's going to be compelling for your fans. The product so far this year has not been compelling. Right now, they're not even as competitive as they need to be. And for next year, and again, there's a lot of time between now and next year, trade deadline and the offseason, but what are you selling for next year?
We've seen a lot of texts come in from people. It's like, hey, mine were raised 14%. Some people have texted in 22%, right? So there's a big range here, but it's a big spike. And you're constantly selling your fans on hope, wins, promise, opportunity. Are you actually completing those sales right now? Like, that's a struggle. This team isn't winning with any consistency. If anything, you know, talent-wise, it's regressing.
Yeah.
Yeah, improvements have been made on the back end, and we can look at the six guys that got there. Like, okay, that's something there. And what do we keep shouting about every postgame right now, these past 3 weeks here? Well, who's going to make something happen in the offensive zone? Again, of course, a lot of it comes to Elias Pettersson again. 9 consecutive games here, tweeted out by Sportsnet Stats, of one or fewer shots on goal by Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, and
9!
And when he has chances to shoot, he doesn't.
Yeah,
you
and now this makes 27 games in a row the Canucks have failed to come back from a third period deficit, or a game where they've gone into the third period trailing. Last year, February 24th, is when it last happened.
It's been a year.
It's been over a year.
They can't come back from behind.
You go down into the third period. You're like, all right, my team's got a chance. I have some hope.
No, they're done.
It's over. Yeah. It's been over a year since that's happened.
It's been rough. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 656-650. We'll get to more of them as the show goes on. Let's take a couple phone calls here before we hit the break, and let's start things off in Richmond, where we have Sam on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight after a 6-3 loss in Seattle?
Thanks for taking our calls, guys. I'm sure you're just loving that we're complaining to all of you guys today. You guys are our listeners today.
Hey, we love it. We love it.
Yeah. So basically, I'm pretty upset as a Canucks fan right now. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Petey has to go. Whether they put him, I know this sounds crazy, but putting it on waivers, this is just he's just awful. They need to get Brock out of here. They need to sell. As far as I'm concerned, maybe at the end of the year, the management needs to be fired, because going from a great team, which they were last year, to this is just totally embarrassing. I agree with all the other fans. Maybe we should start the draft lottery simulator. As far as I'm concerned, I think people should stop going to the games, like you guys think, how they were increasing the season ticket prices. Why should anyone pay money to watch this right now? It's just embarrassing. They can say whatever they want, but it's the product on the ice is just terrible. Frankly, I think JT Miller right now is laughing his head off, and that's about it. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Sam. So Sam, very frustrated, echoing a lot of sentiments we are seeing in the text inbox, Dunbar Lumber, 650-650. Ben from Dunbar says, boo, 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 it's hard to care anymore. I can only get hurt so much.
Do those boos justice. It was more like, boo, boo, boo.
Well, I didn't want to get too excited to say the wrong thing. I already got in trouble once.
Do you have a history of that?
I don't know. I just can't believe I got suspended for, anyways.
No, you weren't suspended. It was a scheduled maintenance day.
I'm not talking about this.
It was a scheduled maintenance day. It was kind of like a few incidents earlier this year where there's some second talk. It was like, it was a scheduled absence.
I'm not taking any more questions.
It's not that serious.
I'm not commenting on this.
Your absence yesterday.
All I can say is I have not requested a trade. But I will say, I mean, it'd be nice if somebody had my back.
Oh, man.
I'll just leave it at that.
It's great.
Um, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Let's take another phone call. Let's go to Edmonton, where we have Bort on the line. Bort, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Okay, well, first of all, Stan, buddy, saying that you should put Pettersson on waivers, that is the worst decision I've ever made since coming on vacation to here to Edmonton. I've had to beat up 6 Edmonton Oilers fans tonight. That is the worst decision. You could still get something for Pettersson. Second of all, the whole team is absolute bunch, guys. Pettersson, Besser, everyone in the entire top 6, they're about as less offensive as, I don't know, the nightlife here in Edmonton. I can't stand it, guys. The whole team needs an absolute rework. Rick Tocchet's offense is about as soft as the doo-doos that come out of my...
Yeah, I guess Fast Eddie Gregory was quick on the dump button there, right?
There's an operative word there.
I'm just leaving it at that. Yeah, I get it. Frustrating stuff. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650.
Just flushing that call away.
Just flushed it right away. Didn't wait. PD on waivers? J-Dog to Carhog is asking. Believe me, we've got a lot of texts here, people saying, Pettersson on waivers. So, like, that's a thought coming into our text inbox. All right.
Look, I know people are like, oh, what's that guy saying about PD on waivers? There's a lot of those texts coming in right now. So, you might disagree with that caller, but there's a lot of those texts coming in right now.
Keep the thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the text inbox. We'll get to more of your phone calls. And we'll hear from the Canucks head coach. He's coming up next on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Dying seconds of the power play. Eberle, right wing to the Vancouver line, dumps it behind the net. Jared McCann left circle, into the slot. Stevenson missed it, comes right point. Montour with a drive, he scores! Just as the penalty was expiring, Brandon Montour beats Kevin Lankin and sticks side, and it's 5-3 Seattle.
The Kraken come right back in after the power play expires. Puck falls up to the point after the missed pass in the slot, and Montour is able to creep into the top of the circles, winds it up, and the Stanley Cup champ beats Lankin on the blocker side to give the Kraken their first 2-goal lead of the game.
Canucks had a couple leads, couldn't hold on to them, lose 6-3 in Seattle against the Kraken, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And, you know, fans tonight are not very happy with what's happened with the team. Not a lot of optimism either from fans. 55 years in the league and 0 Stanley Cups. They will never win one. Pathetic is what one unsigned text message says. And there are a lot of them like that right now in the text inbox, Pick.
Whether it's fans who have been watching this team from its inception saying it's never going to happen, or even the new fans that are being born into it. Benton and Kamloops. Tough being a Canucks fan. I have a 3-year-old daughter that watches the games with me. My favorite thing is that anytime we put the game on, her first reaction is, boo! She even points her thumbs down and everything. So everyone's used to it. Everyone's on board with what's happening here. Everyone gets it. Whether you're 65 years old or apparently 3 years old. It's tough vibes right now.
They know it. They feel it, right? And I think a lot of fans have also been through the ups and downs with the team, and I think there was a lot of hope that, hey, they were kind of down through the downturn and this year, and we don't need to revisit everything, relitigate everything that's happened this year, but I don't think anybody expected them to have to move JT Miller, and Pettersson being going through the struggles he's going through, and last year's team being turned upside down the way it has been, and it creates a very uneasy feeling for a lot of people, and I totally understand why. Stu says, when is enough enough? The biggest mistake the Canucks made was signing Pettersson. He's struggling then. It felt he was struggling then, and it felt that was the reason Petey wasn't playing well. Alvin has too much invested in him. So A lot of people not happy, and management's taking a lot of blame as well for the team finding itself in this position the way it is. So, you know, there's a lot of that as well.
Everyone's part of it.
Yeah,
right?
Like Augusto and Burnaby says Pettersson is becoming a management embarrassment that has been handled poorly. So infuriating to watch. Management is now 100% at fault. So, you know, you're getting a lot of that in text inbox as well. To your point, when losing like this happens, everybody takes shots.
And it's not even about the roster construction, right? Like, you can just go to, was there a certain level of, you know, hubris and saying, hey, every situation is resolved. We don't have to worry. We don't have to be on top of dynamics of the whole locker room. And if they slept on some of things and some things crept up, like, that's part of it too. And was that something that could have been taken care of 2 years ago? Why was this the plan to go down this road? Did you invite some of the, like, everyone shares every part of what's happened here this entire season.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get to more of your texts coming up in a bit. But let's go back to the phone boards before we get to the Canucks head coach. And we'll start things off in Chilliwack, where we have Mike on the line. Mike, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here after a 6-3 Canucks loss in Seattle?
Well, I watched the game from the beginning to the end. In the first period, and when Seattle scored early, I thought, oh, here we go again. But then the Canucks, you know, showed a little bit of resiliency and came back. But then in the second period, it's almost like the team that went in the locker room came out a different team altogether, and they didn't play their game the way they can play their game. And I think that, let's put it this way, Pettersson and Besser, these guys that are playing, even though they're on the third line, put them on the fourth line. Give some of the other guys that are willing to come out there and try and play hard the whole game instead of basically bringing those guys in. They're not shooting the puck enough when it comes to being around the net. Like so many times tonight, I'm like, shoot. And they're passing that puck. They always have to make this perfect pass instead of shooting the puck. And you can get deflections by shooting the puck, right? But, I mean, I've been watching them since I was a kid. And the only thing I got to say at this point, you know what? I'm frustrated like everybody else, but in the end, you know, there's only two things that can happen here. The Canucks are going to come out the next game and play hard and show not only themselves, but show the fans they can play hard. If they can't do that, then you know what? Then what I suggest is that they just basically either trade Petey, trade Besser, but I'd like to see Besser stay and get rid of Petey myself because I think the guy's overpaid. He's not paying up to his potential as far as I'm concerned. And then my last comment would be Tockett needs to light a fire under these guys because they're so inconsistent. And he should be he's the coach and he says, oh, you know, I'm disappointed in this, I'm disappointed in that. Well, follow up on it. Start holding his players accountable to what they're doing. At that, I'll let you go. I'll go back to the radio. Thanks.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate the passion as well. And, you know, we'll hear from the head coach coming up in a couple moments here. He has been reluctant to go off fully on these guys. I'm sure he has behind closed doors. Considering the fragility and considering just the overall ineptness they have offensively, it's like how much is that going to accomplish? You know, and he looks like a guy who's running out of cards to play.
Cards to play. He's not even at the table anymore. Like the deck is gone. Again, like I get it. Like people say, like, hey, play Pettersson 12 minutes. Okay, like you can do that. Man, like who's like his responsibility is to go try to win games.
Yeah.
Does he have a level of faith that Pew Suter is going to be the guy that scores goals? Because then you're going to have to give him 19 minutes a night. Is he having faith that R.C. Baines can play 14 minutes? Like, the minutes have to get allocated somewhere then.
Yeah.
I'm all for, like, reducing the minutes for Elias Pettersson. Put him on the fourth line. Like, these are all valid suggestions right now. Send a message. The minutes have to go somewhere. If you're Rick Tockett right now, I don't think he's going to give Teddy Bluger 17 minutes a night.
No, I mean, why?
Like, these are the situations, then, if you reduced Pettersson down to 12 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, even we were talking last game, people were mentioning, you know, should they maybe healthy scratch him? It's like you don't have a ton of other options, but a guy like Pew Suter has been more effective.
Totally, yeah,
right?
I get it.
Like, but it's like
marginally effective, but yeah.
Yeah, but he's got a goal tonight, for instance, and since like him and Tyler Myers have led the team in scoring since, what, January 24th, whatever it is?
Sportsnet stats put this out during the first period, so I don't know if it's still factual. But since January 26th, Tyler Myers and Piyu Suter lead the way with 8 points.
Yeah. And
a couple more guys got points, but I don't think they would have crested that.
And you know what the frustrating part about this game again is? Like, the Canucks generated a good amount of scoring chances. They had the lead. They did a lot of good things, but they had so many breakdowns. We'll break down the goals a bit later, but, you know, like, I don't really buy the they just had bad luck argument for tonight's game either, because if you look at the three tip goals that happened, the deflections that happened, the players are in alone. It's either a blown coverage, a defensive mistake, slow rotation, but you leave guys alone in front of your net for a chance to tip and deflect, you're leaving them alone, yeah. You know, and
tips are like not a high percentage shot. You're all alone. It makes it a lot easier.
It does. And you know, Woodley's talked about this, like tip shots, like the percentage of them going on in is pretty significant. So there's a lot of that tonight. So I don't even feel like, hey, cause that could have easily, if I felt like the Canucks played well enough tonight and truly deserved to win, I would have said that. I didn't feel like that tonight, despite the fact that generated a good scoring chance, despite the fact that for the first half of the game, they did a lot of good things. But those breakdowns, those lapses of judgment, those mistakes, they've just plagued them all season.
This one, 650-650, keep sending the texts in. Stop calling Petey 11.6. We live in Canada. We should actually be calling him 16.75. That sounds way worse.
And it gets more expensive by the day.
Someone's doing the exchange rate. Yeah, it does. It's going to be 17 before we know it. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. All right, I like it. I like when people make us laugh.
Jokes for 60. Actually, that one's a fact.
Fact for 60. Yeah. We take facts for 60 as well, or facts only, as we like to call it. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of your phone calls as well coming up in a little bit, 604-280-0650. But let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town.
Rick, another strong start from the team that just didn't fall your way. You mentioned last game, just not enough grit and not sticking to the game plan. What did you see tonight?
I thought we had a pretty good game. You know, they got three tip goals. I think we could have boxed out on one of them. You got to get other people's sticks. We had a couple posts, a couple breakaways. It's one of those things, you know, the moments are there. We just couldn't capitalize.
You think if, you know, it was 2-1, you think if you'd been able to score another or two there that might.
Well, it obviously gives it more confidence, yeah. You know, but, you know, the tip goals are, they're tough because they're just kind of like three tip goals, and you were kind of hoping that, you know, we lose the draw. Like, things like that are moments that we got to really dig down in.
Yeah. How much, what can you do to get more from your top players?
Those guys got to get some shots on net. I don't think a couple guys had. Didn't get any shots on net. You got to get pucks in the net in this game. You know, sometimes you just got to get a greasy goal, whatever it takes.
Piyu Suter, back-to-back goals in each game, and he's got a career high with 16 right now. What have you seen from his game in the last couple of months?
Well, he's really worked on his shot over the summer, and it's paying off. You know, those are just getting some good slot shots. So, he's a positive force.
Somebody said that Quinn might have left early. Was there anything to that?
Yeah, he didn't play the last seven. He was a little he tweaked something, so we'll look at it tomorrow. I'm not sure what's going on.
It's been about a month since Filippito joined the team. What has he added to the Canucks over the last month?
Yeah, he's obviously really a talented guy. There's a lot to work with him. So, you know, there's some parts of his game we're going to work on, but I think for the rush game, holding on to pucks, you know, we need that type of play in our lineup, and he supplies that for us.
And Arshdy Baines drew back into the lineup. What did you see from him tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, you know, he was fine. I mean, he didn't get much ice time at the end. It's tough when you don't play at the end. We're trying to press, get some goals.
6-1-1 going into the break, and I'm sure had high hopes for this trip with just the one win. How important is the mindset for guys like not to start to get the feeling like?
Well, it's a good point. Like, I mean, you know, we're going into, you know, every game, even this game, tight games, going in late in the game. The other team's coming up with moments and we're not. That's really what it comes down to. You know, you're looking for a scoring on a break or scoring on 2-on-1 to go up two goals. You know, we're looking for that, or, you know, a block shot or something, you know, winning three or four draws in a row. That's when you're in tight games, that's what you have to have, that mentality.
Are you surprised, given that the form of the team is about as good as it's been all year before the break, are you surprised that it's, you know, changed here during the 2 weeks off?
Well, I mean, like, I think there's certain guys that are playing well. You know, I think there's parts of our game. So we can't, got to be careful how we analyze certain things. That's the way I look at it. But, yeah, we're, you know, you're in tight games and you're looking for when to play under pressure, you know. And right now, like I said, the other team's coming up with moments and we're not.
That is the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And I think the big thing is the status of Quinn Hughes and what is going to happen next. And we don't quite know. Didn't have much of an update on it, but didn't sound
just
overly promising.
Tweak something.
Doesn't sound very overly promising,
so,
right?
And he didn't play, look at it.
Yeah, didn't play the last 9 minutes of the game as well, right? So you're hoping that it's nothing significant. If it is, I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying the Canucks season is already cooked, but it really might be if Quinn Hughes is gone for any extended period of time. But he had a real rough night tonight. We'll break down the goals again coming up a bit. And you don't blame Quinn because he's, you know, fighting through something and he's been terrific for the team all year. But he looked like a guy who was really battling something tonight, and a real rough night all across the board.
Yeah, a couple of moments throughout the game, of course. The Bjorkstrand one is the one that really stands out because he's in the corner and he's just kind of doing feeble cross checks on, I think it was whoever was in the corner. It may have been Bjorkstrand or Burakovsky. But it just, you know, it didn't look like he had any force to give in his core to be able to just hold a guy against the wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about in the intermission, we've seen Quinn Hughes last season. Like, the one play that always going to stand out, and it felt like, okay, this is the growth of the player, was a game against Winnipeg against Mark Scheifele, who's a burly, tough, win against the boards type center. And Quinn Hughes, you know, gets a stick on him, pivots him, turns his body into him, really physical play. And you saw
drives
that.
Drives through him to the boards.
Drives
right?
through him and pinned him. And it's like, that play was dead because Quinn Hughes squashed it with force and precision and everything that you want to see. You're like, oh, wow, like that's a one that sticks out in your mind. And you saw that over the course of last season. Tonight, like, you watch that play, that Bjorkstrand goal, that whole sequence, man, that looked like a player struggling for any sort of physical force. And then, like, he has giveaways with the puck. Just a lot of just tough moments. And you can see, like, how much things are weighing on him. And on tonight, when they went 12-6, right, you thought, okay, here's a step in his health.
Yeah.
We can give him more minutes, and the load can be stronger. Obviously, it was too much.
Yeah, it really was, right? And we got this text here. It says, we came to Seattle as Canucks fans, and we left with our hearts broken and something in our hands. It was an eventful night. We work hard for our Canadian dollars. Not only did the exchange rate screw us, but so did the Canucks. So that's a rough one. You go to Seattle to watch this one, and that's tough. But you know what? Good on you guys, man. Like, good on you, the good fans, trying to have a good time. It's tough.
It's a nice trip.
Seattle's fun.
Yeah, I like going down there.
I like going to Seattle. I'm watching the Canucks in Seattle, I don't know.
Still want to go to that building. Apparently, it's supposed to be really nice.
Yeah, I haven't been in
CPA?
The new CPA, I got to go check it out. Yeah. What did you make of the head coach to talk it, saying he had a pretty good game? A lot of people texting in about that. I don't believe it. It's like we said before, especially with the team's losing confidence and is fragile, is he going to kick them in the media, especially going back to Vancouver, 1-4 road trip? Like, it's more of those managing things.
It's tough to do. Yeah, it's tough to do back. Like, he just said he's disappointed in the grit last game. Is he going to go back to it? Like, eventually, like if you're worried, is he lost the room? Like, the way to lose the room is keep saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to go double down on it and say, hey, they don't have a lot of grit. Like, he's said it now. It's known, man. Like, we see what happens. Grit, pride, whatever you want to call it. And he's mentioned, hey, where's the pride in the crest? Or you're meant to have pride in the crest. Where is it?
Yeah.
I don't see it. Do you see it? We have people saying, I'm not going to the next game. I'm not renewing season tickets. Where's the pride?
Well, and
it does not exist right now.
And we saw it for a lot of home games this year, too. And fans spending their hard-earned money going to home games and being left with a bunch of duds, like, it's unacceptable. And, you know, and now you're watching these games on the road. Sure, you know, it's not on home ice or whatever, but it doesn't inspire confidence or nor enthusiasm for their home games coming up.
Especially, for fans who have the pride of showing up all the time, wanting to be there, wanting to see this finally get toppled over and the team have success and say, wow, this 55-year monkey that hangs on the back. Fans still show up all the time. Like, when you say something like that, Seth, like, wow, it really has been 55 years.
It's a long time, man.
Why do people still show up? It's stunning to think about. And yet, people get so much enjoyment out of this. People take so much pride in being the Canucks fans.
Yeah.
And it has to be reciprocated. And it's not.
No, I get
it. It's like the effort's not there.
No, and
that's the dispiriting part.
And Zorro and Suri says, I've always been a huge talk fan, but this his first words being, I think we played a pretty good game. That really bothers me. And again, like, I get it. And you're fair to feel whatever way you want to feel. But in these post games things, he's not thinking about the media or he's not thinking about the fans. He's not thinking about the right thing to say. He's thinking about what to say to not draw too much attention either at the same time. So that's, and whether you think that's good enough, I think that's, you know, the way he's going about it. But as far as finding answers, he also sounds like a guy who can't. Like, he's asked about his top players. You got to get shots on goal, right? He mentions winning faceoffs. They didn't win faceoffs. And then even after faceoffs, you know, are you in the right spot? And again, we'll get to that. Pettersson loses a faceoff to Matty Beniers, and Matty Beniers beats him to the front of the net.
Yep.
He gets inside, gets a tip. And we can talk about losing the faceoff. Okay, fine, you lose the faceoff, but what are you doing afterwards? Are you taking away the threat at the very least? And that didn't happen. And that's how these things get compounded. You're going to lose some of these faceoffs, but what do you do when you lose one? And can you stay within your structure? And that didn't happen on too many occasions here tonight. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of them as the show goes on. But let's go to Suri on the phone boards and start things off with Ashton. Ashton, thanks for calling in. And what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys, I got a lot of thoughts. Appreciate you taking my call here. But, you know, the first thing, I actually just listened to Talk's post-game comments, and I give him a bit of grace because, to be honest with you, the roster that he's given is what he's obviously given to work with. And it's not a great roster, but I find he's too soft. He talked about, you know, well, there's been a couple comments about, like, man, the guys are, they don't have confidence, they're a little bit down on themselves. Like, it's the NHL, like, I don't know. I'm sorry. Like, if they can't handle it, like, if they can't handle the criticism, you know, like, I wish he was a little bit more, like, upfront, aggressive. Like, call him out. Call your best players out. Like, he's kind of reluctant to do that. So there's that. Number two, I kind of feel like we've been taken because last year, you know, we had the great season. We went to the playoffs, all that stuff. We had a phenomenal year. First time in 10 years where there's something to be excited about. And, like, I'm thinking, like, okay, we're turning the corner. Wrong. You know, where are we? We're back to, you know, where we are now. I'm saying shut down Hughes. Clearly he's hurt. It's not a year. Shut him down. Tell Pettersson to stay home. We don't even need him out there. You know, he's got one goal in his last, what, 21 games? Brock, I think he's got four goals in his last, like, 25, something like that. You can't sign Brock. Sorry, but you can't. So sell what you can. It's not our season. Find a way to move that entire Pettersson contract. It might be the worst contract in the NHL. I can't believe we're saying this after, you know, a year after we signed it. But also, I want to say shame on the management for letting that drama get to that point between Pettersson and Miller. They knew there was already issues. Bruce Boudreau confirmed it. Brad Richardson confirmed it. There was already issues. Why it got to that point, I don't know, but shame on them for letting it get to that point. But do whatever you can to get rid of that Pettersson contract. It is killing us, and I don't know that guy's going to get back to being a 100-point player, but man, it's tough. It's, you know, diehard Canucks fan, but it is tough watching them, and talk, be a bit more aggressive, call them out. Like, I wish Pettersson would talk to the media more too. I don't know why he's never answering to the media, but he seems to find an excuse for why he sucks, whether it's his knee, whether it's the Miller drama, whether it's, you know, the media is annoying to deal with. I don't care, but like, yeah, I hear a lot of thoughts, but also the fact that we've just dropped four in regulation to Pacific Division teams that are chasing us, not good.
No, it's not great at all.
There's my thoughts. I got a lot of them, but I don't know. Let me know your thoughts.
Yeah, you got it, Ashton. Thanks for the phone call. And I don't necessarily disagree with a lot of things he had to say. I just don't get too worked about what the coach says. I'm just resigned to the fact that the coaches are going to say things based on whatever they think is best for their team, not best for you know, how we should feel about things and how they convey their message to the fans, so to speak, and even to the media. But I understand the reasoning behind it. You know, and as far as Besser goes, that's going to be the decision before the trade deadline.
And it's 4 goals in 23 games. We'll be facts-holing about this, but that's still 4 goals in 23 games.
Yeah, it's 4 and 23.
One shot attempt tonight that didn't go on net. Elias Pettersson took 4 shot attempts. None of them went on net. So there you go.
Who do you play with him with here? That's, to me, the biggest question, again, what Besser has always come down to. I can understand a number for Besser, and I even would say if you get him to a team-friendly number at a 6-year deal, it's an underrated contract because of the value you can get with that. But that's just from a pure value standpoint. Who do you play him with? He clearly hasn't worked with Pettersson for years. Not just this year, for years. We haven't seen nearly enough to feel like him and Hedl are going to be a combo. And then if you're thinking about bringing somebody else in, that's also making a projection. Where does he fit? Like, he's clearly a good player. He's clearly a guy that can help you out, and notwithstanding his lack of production these past 24 games. But for a team that's already staring at a problem with Pettersson right now, are you willing to commit to a contract to Besser if you're the organization, if you don't have no confidence in who to play him with? And management has to wear this too, because they double down on this team, triple down on this team, signing Pettersson, signing JT Miller, trading away Bo Horvat. And now you have all these existential questions about where do they go? How do you move past this? They felt like they could control this, and clearly they couldn't. And now the team is worse, and the pathway to getting better is significantly more difficult than what it was even 3 months ago. So it's a fair criticism. Management has to figure this out, but let's not fool ourselves into thinking that there's an easy solution here. For this team to turn around, be a competitor within the next year, to convince Quinn to stay? Listen, we've had enough depressing conversations, but right now that does not look like a needle they looked poised to thread.
Even the team-friendly number. All right, so like, give me an AAV. Like, that's
for Besser?
7.5.
7.5 over 6 years? Like that, because he's getting at least like 8/7, yeah. Right? Like,
okay.
6 years.
I'll say even 7.75, okay?
Sure.
Team, that's still team-friendly.
Yes.
Answer this question. If Brock Besser is a top 3 cap hit for your forwards, do you think you can win a Stanley Cup? And I think that's the question you should be asking. I like the player, man. He's done a lot of good stuff. The thing is, things expire.
Yeah.
Contracts expire. There is a responsibility on every player. And I'm not just saying this about Brock, but like every single player that comes into any sport. You're restricted until you're not, of course. He's coming up to a stage where he's unrestricted. But you've got a responsibility to prove that, hey, I can be a solution for you to do the thing you want to go do, win the championships. You're now at a stage where you're going to go be able to test unrestricted free agency. That timeline has expired. You got one game left. I don't think you can answer that question and be like, hey, we can pay you top dollar and also accomplish the thing that we are going to be competing for the highest honors.
Yeah.
It's... That timeline, it's gone.
Yeah.
So where we've sat here, it's like, hey, you're far more of a play finisher, and those are functional hockey players that are necessary to go compete. But where the Canucks are right now, you've got to be able to do the job in the time that's afforded to you. And and he's not proven that he's anything more than a play finisher.
Yeah.
And that's nice, but with what they have to allocate here, his timeline doesn't fit the Canucks' timeline.
They need a driver that he can play alongside to finish off those chances.
There you go.
And if you're signing him before the driver, makes it complicated because you're not sure how it's going to fit.
You're taking away a roster spot. You're taking up cap space. You're not getting assets for the player.
But again, this is the bet management made because they traded JT, and again they felt like they had to because of everything that happened. But now you deal with the situation. So what decision do you make? Right? It's a really tough spot they find themselves in.
To be honest, like, the decision is made for them. It's just, do they have enough conviction to make the decision? And we'll find out here in 6 days.
Yeah, and I still think there's a chance he stays. And again, I'm not sure that's going to please the fan base. It'll please some. It'll also not please many others, because we're seeing Bob and Victoria, others saying they got to get rid of Besser. Now, in the spirit of facts only, Ken from Coquitlam says, for once, Pettersson never said those excuses. Those are from the fans and the media as far as, you know, blaming stuff. You know, Pettersson just said he's tired of talking to the media, in fairness to what he had to say. But Charles and Langley and others say, great call from Ashton. And Charles says, except nobody's taking Pettersson. So not a lot of confidence that the Canucks can even trade Pettersson if they even try to move Elias Pettersson. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of your phone calls on the other side as well. And we'll get more analysis. We'll break the goals down. We'll hear from Canuck players. Plus, IMAC is coming up on the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. Canucks lose 6-3. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drance.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
A little bit of a shout out on the out-of-town scoreboard here, Canucks. Tyler Myers, his half-brother, Quinton Grimes, put up a 44 tonight.
As the Kraken get a goal right off the draw. Vince Dunn for the left point. Drove it through on Lankinen. And Matty Beniers got a piece of this one in the slot. Another deflection finds the back of the goal, and the game is tied at 3.
Well, I tried to bring the good news, and this is what happens right off the draw.
Well, it obviously gives him more confidence, you know, but, you know, the tip goals are... They're tough because they're just kind of like three tip goals, and you were kind of hoping that you know, we lose a draw, like things like that, are moments that we got to really dig down in.
Moments you got to dig down in. Did not dig in enough. Canucks lose 6-3, and bad timing for Reach.
That was great.
That's a great one. 44 points from Grimes. I mean, that's great. That's a great game from Quinton Grimes.
That's an unreal clip.
But yeah, it didn't work out. He's trying to bring some positivity, and next thing you know, Canucks end up losing. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, Satin Bake on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And if you missed it, Quinn Hughes did not play the last 9 minutes of the game. The head coach said he tweaked something. They don't know what his status is, but... you know, it kind of went from bad to worse in this hockey game tonight. And in a road trip that was unsuccessful, ends with a whimper and even more concern. So the problems just keep mounting for the Canucks here, Bick. And that's how fans are feeling. Jim and Burnaby says Canucks are done. They got it wrong shipping out JT. No soul or spirit to drive the engine. EP has bombed the top six in the whole season. Be lucky to get a bag of pucks for him, Jim and Burnaby. So a lot of that, that's kind of the overarching sentiment, right? Like the Canucks are done. People are tired of the team and Elias Pettersson in the crosshairs.
Alan Vancouver, I'm another guy on the growing list of people who are done with this. It's just... so embarrassing. Unsigned text here. I'm at a loss for words when it comes to this team. Goaltending disaster. I can't imagine how deflating it is when you can't count on your goalie to make timely saves. Pettersson needs not only be benched. I was go as far as sending him down to the minors for reconditioning, away from the spotlight, so we can find his game without noise. I can assure you, if he gets sent down for conditioning, he's not away from the spotlight. Everyone will be paying attention. This season's over. Canucks need to come to terms with reality. We're not talking about losing to mid-level teams. These are basement dwellers that are making us look like a defunct CHL squad. Bring up the young talent so they can properly assess what exactly this team has so they can make informed changes in the offseason.
Now, I will admit, we're getting so many texts, and we do every single night, and we try to do our best to keep up, and we miss some and can't keep up with everything, but we see most of them, and we appreciate every single one, and we read as many as we can and try to interact with them. And we try to give you a wide array of opinions.
Of the rational ones that we can read.
Yeah, and also, yeah, just, you know, and even the irrational ones, we'll at least cite and say, hey, there are a lot of people, you know, that are saying certain things, and just kind of, you know, just summarize it without getting into any specifics. But, like, there are no positive ones to read. There's no, like, hey, guys, it'll be okay. Hey, guys, I believe. Or, like, hey, guys, I thought this was good. I thought that was, like, maybe there's been a few, but very few and far between, and not enough for me to be able to even... to pick one out and read one. Like, I'm, you know, we try to hold on to a few to read and grab a few to have them ready to go. And there just isn't that. Like, trust me, the representation is what you're getting. Like, this is the overwhelming sentiment from the fan base from this game here tonight. And I can't say that I'm surprised by it, but just to kind of make it clear, if we're reading a lot of negative text and you're wondering why, like, that's because that's all we're getting.
That's what we're getting. Nicole and Comox, I'm tired of watching EP40 do nothing every night. I'm okay not winning the trade. If we can move him without retaining salary, if he goes elsewhere and scores 100 points, that's fine. That doesn't mean he would have returned to form here. If another team would have traded a player of Miller's caliber, it clearly would signal a major retool at the very least. Management cannot expect the Miller trade to be the thing that moves the needle. More follow-up moves are needed. This core group of young players needs change. They haven't won anything yet. We can't keep bringing back the same guys and hope for a different result. I have a Besser jersey in my closet, but it's time to say goodbye and try to get some assets.
Yeah, it's tough, but I get it. Jason, the goalie killer, says, yeah, but Seattle doesn't have a true game breaker either, yet they managed to score 6 goals.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right, keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more as the show goes on here, but let's go back to the foam boards, and let's start things off in Langley, where we have Jordan on the line. Jordan, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for providing the show here, and thanks for taking my call. So, I felt it. I'm on my way home from work right now. I watched most of the game at work, and I felt like it was 2 or 3 years ago I called you guys with the same apathetic attitude about the team, and they're very lucky they had the season they did last year to prevent a lot of that. I think it would be a pretty dark state right now, but with JT leaving, that would be the big core piece that left. It's pretty grim, and how can we applaud this management group? When we look at the pieces they had and look at what we have now, they had 3 good centers. And now, you know, we have one of them left, but he's not good. It's just a pretty sad state. And this team's never, at least like as long as I can remember, we've never had a proper tank. And when is it going to happen? This isn't working. Not that tanks work often, or there's no guaranteed way to build a champion, but it just doesn't work. Let's just break it down. You know, Quinn, you can look there. You could break somebody's career into 3 sections, beginning, middle, end, and he's in the middle. He might be at his ultimate peak right now. This whole thought of if he leaves in 2 years, so what? Does anybody realistically see a path for this team to win in the next 2 years? And then you got to build it. It's going to take more than 2 years to build a team when you have, you know, basically one good player right now, or not one good player, but one, you know, foundational centerpiece player right now. Anyways, thanks for taking my call, guys. I hope everybody's having a good night. Bye.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call. Jordan calling in from Langley. So yeah, a lot of that coming in too on the text inbox. We mentioned how, it's kind of been apathy and anger, and he was citing, Jordan, the apathy that he's feeling and kind of where they go next because of the issues, and it creates this existential dread as well. But there are a few people that say it's going to be okay. Jake says, hey guys, it's going to be okay. So somebody texted in.
I think that might be a joke text to saying we're not getting those ones.
Oh, okay.
But we do get a couple other ones.
Wait, there was this one. Go ahead.
Everyone needs to relax on a scale of 1 to 10 of things going wrong. We are at about a 9 this year, and they're still in the playoffs. Yes, some things have to change, but it's not as bad as everyone's making it out to be. Everything has gone right in Calgary. They have less points than us.
Facts only, right? Like, facts only. Fair, however,
fair perspective, but also...
Fair perspective. But the only reason they're in a playoff spot is because the bar is so incredibly low.
Correct.
It's 89 points
is basically the bar. And, like, historically, the average is about 94.
94, yes.
So it's a gap here.
Yeah, but, hey, fair enough. But that's kind of what we're getting a lot, too, from people texting in saying, hey, the only reason they're in a playoff spot is because of the weak nature of the wild card race and how poor the teams are. But facts only, still, they are in the race, and a lot of things have gone wrong for the Canucks so far this season, and yet they are still in the race, as the texter does mention. Let's take one more phone call here before we hit the break, and let's go to LA, where we have Chad on the line. Chad, thanks for calling in, bud. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. You know, more than anything, I'm just disappointed. We had 3 players to build around, and when we lost Demko, I really think that just set us back, and I don't think you can overstate what a loss that was. And at this point, I don't even know what contract you would offer him going forward, because there's just no reassurance there. So with Patterson playing the way he is, I got to think it might be time for a rebuild. Just disappointed, guys. I was really hoping for a better year, but thanks so much. Enjoy, you guys.
Thanks, Chad. Yeah, hey, appreciate it, man. Thanks for the phone call. And that disappointment is how we all feel it too. Like, I love this job, to sit here and talk about sports, and I love it even more when the team is fun and competitive and has success. And the success they had last year was exhilarating. The playoff was a lot of fun, and we wanted it to go farther and longer than it did, but you know, it was still a positive step in the right direction. And, you know, none of us thought that even if they do take a bit of a step back this year, that they would be falling off the way they have fallen off. And the fact they find themselves here with JT gone and Pettersson going through his struggles, it has been bewildering. And I understand the level of frustration that's been around that as well here tonight. So I totally get it. Now, on the other side, I do want to break down some of the goals and things that we saw here tonight. And, you know, one guy we talked about heading into the game was Kevin Lankinen, how he's been the guy who's really held the Canucks in games a lot this season. I don't know if you want to blame him tonight, because we'll talk about the goals coming up in a little bit, but it was like he came in and it just, like, it was like nothing he could do, right? Like, you guys are alone 3 or 4 feet in front of him, get, you know, tip shots go in. It just felt like, you know, he was let down a little bit tonight.
Clean redirects. How much is Kevin Lankinen supposed to save those? Like, very, very difficult spots on plays that, as Rick Tocchet put it, you know, have to get under people's sticks, have to box guys out, have to get at least close to players. And there was an unwillingness to engage with enough frequent defensive work today. And that put them behind the eight ball and certainly put Kevin Lankinen in a very, very tough spot.
Yeah, and I thought it was one of those games coming in that, you know, it could be a little bit higher scoring. I thought the chances would go back and forth. It's just very frustrating because the Canucks, again, they created the better scoring chances for the most part and just had these like really bad breakdowns that cost them. And we saw a lot of this even in years prior where they would play some good games, but then they'd have these really back-breaking mistakes and these really bad blown assignments that lead to goals against. And it's one thing to have blown assignments and make some mistakes every once in a while, but it's like the mistakes they make are like, if you look at the expected goals, like half an expected goal. You know, I mean, Woodley's talked about this a lot. It's, you know, some games they only give up 4 or 5, but the 4 or 5 they're giving up are like,
Excellent chances
chances that are very hard to stop, and those are the ones you have to prevent. And this was one of those nights here for me.
Yeah, especially like the quick ones, like the Beniers one. It's right off a faceoff, and Beniers gets so open so fast, so similar to the Cooley goal against Utah, right off a faceoff, and he's able to pivot away from Hedl in that Utah game. Tonight, it was pivoting away from Elias Pettersson in this moment. And then, again, another goal, like a minute later, it's Tolvanen, and you know, I get Quinn Hughes breaks a stick on this one, and maybe he doesn't want to engage with the guy without a stick, but there's clearly some like miscommunication here, because three guys end up going on a near post shooter or a far post forward while the shot goes to the near post, and Tolvanen's all by himself in this spot, and just these moments kept piling up here.
Yeah, they certainly did, right? And you know, and I think those are the things that are really frustrating. And like we mentioned, you go 1-4 on a road trip like this late into a season, it can really sink your playoff hopes, but it hasn't. And, you know, Wild Eddie did, Fast Eddie Gregory did the math on what we saw last year. Wildcard teams last season had 99 and 98 points. Nashville had 99, Vegas had 98.
Yeah, and this year we're trending to 89. And historically, there's only been 3 teams that have made the playoffs with less than 89 points.
Yeah, that's a difference of, you know, 4 or 5 wins. That's significant. All right, we'll continue breaking this down. We'll break down the goals. We'll hear from Canuck players plus Ian McIntyre on the Canuck Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Wright knocks down Sherwood into the corner, and the Kraken are back off ice. McCann, left wing, into the Vancouver zone with speed, forced wide by Soucy, who gets it loose to Joshua. Canucks with a 2-on-1 chance, shorthanded. Drew O'Connor down the right wing, in front of Dakota Joshua, to the backhand, he scores! Dakota Joshua, shorthanded, reestablishes the lead for Vancouver. His fourth of the season makes it 3-2 Canucks.
This looks like the Dakota Joshua of 12 months ago. He takes the pass off the 2-on-1 and doesn't just shoot it right away. He pulls it back to his backhand, and Joey Decord is left helpless. to make that save. A huge goal against the run of play. The Canucks PK coming up big to give them back the lead.
Canucks win once on a five-game road trip. 6-3 loss tonight in Seattle against the Kraken. And this is the Canucks on the Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox, 650-650 Dunbar Lumber, and we will get to your thoughts as the show goes on. We'll break down the goals, and we'll get to Ian McIntyre coming up in a little bit as well. This text from Kevin Burnaby. As Bieksa said, we have too many stick checkers and not enough guys who get through bodies, one of the easiest teams to play against. So you know, we've seen this team be hard to play against when they play hard, and we saw it in the first period. It's just the inconsistency in doing so, because that first goal was scored, and we'll get to it, because a relentless forecheck and a hard-to-play player like Kiefer Sherwood getting in on the forecheck pick. But what else are you seeing on the text inbox?
This one, 650-650, from Kurt in the George, trading a 26-year-old who's produced 0.92 points per game because of a bad year is insane. You don't overpay a career 0.4 point per game player because he has one good season. And he's also calling out everyone who's called in about or texted in about trading Pettersson, saying, "The trolls have taken over your show. That's why you don't get actual fans trying to engage in discussion. Fans have left you because of the airtime you give to the losers." So I think you
I like to see winners. No. I'm saying winners, please call in. Winners, yes. Call in. Winners, text in. And I will read your text messages. I brought it up because I didn't see enough of them. I wanted to read the positive ones. Winners, stand up. Be a winner. If you're a winner, don't let the losers take over. Why are you letting the losers win? Winners, step up.
Sat on his Glengarry Glenn Ross. Was like, texting is for closers. Airtime is for winners.
Yeah, you want to? Hey, winners, bring it.
Good father, get the hell out of here.
I want winners.
Coffee is for closers.
I don't want nice guys. I want winners.
I do want to address this because I think you and I, I'm going to speak for your on your behalf here. You and I have been rather uniform on the idea that Pettersson, like we're both believers in the talent, right? And I think there's a difference between being a believer in a talent and defending what's happening right now. You can't defend what's happening right now. You can have a context of, hey, like this player eventually will come back. It's silly to bail on this guy at who's done these things and reached historic heights. And Reach and I yesterday on a Connect Central podcast, you were away for a one-game suspension / scheduled maintenance day. We went through the whole league and basically looking at it and saying, what player has better upside that might become available than what Pettersson has shown you to do? And I understand the frustrations, but we always talk about a phrase of, I'd rather try to figure out how to tame an aggressive player than try to poke and prod a timid player.
Right.
So apply that same logic to a star-level player, right? Because there's really only truly 10 like elite number one centers.
Well, that's why he got paid what he got paid, because that was a projection.
In theory, Pettersson should be one of those 10 to make it 11.
Well, his salary does,
yes. So if you go through it, and I like Dylan Cousins, I like Nick Suzuki, I like Robert Thomas, and all these guys, they play first line minutes, but they're not number one centers. Like, they're not that Aho, Barkov, Point, Crosby, McKinnon, they're not in that tier. So even if you bail on Pettersson to get one of those guys, you're still going to end up with the same issues.
Yeah.
So do you just double down and believe in the guy? And again, like I'm okay with the idea of they hold on to him in the offseason and try to solve the problem of how to get him back to a level he's shown rather than make projection of get a guy to a level that he hasn't shown. But I'm not going to sit here and defend what's happened this season and what will happen for the remaining 22 games. He's not shooting the puck.
Well, like that chance he had on the power play, just all the time in the world, there's a player in front. I think it was Philip Hedl or whoever was in front. No, it wasn't Philip Hedl.
It was Garland.
It was Garland in front. Yeah. And it's like, just get the shot into the pads at the very least. Create a rebound and just holds on to it and skates to the outside. And next thing you know, doesn't do anything about it, right?
650-650, Brandon and Poco. Winners call their colleagues by the wrong name.
Yeah, exactly. Find ways to win. It's not about being nice.
I still showed up to work the next day.
I didn't.
Oh man!
But that's a different conversation.
Oh yeah! Let's go!
I love it. Yes. All right. That's some good stuff. All right. Let's get to the goals. We mentioned this. It is a Seattle Kraken that the Kraken win the hockey game. They did open up the scoring to make it 1-0. And, you know, we talked about Quinn Hughes left the game, came back to the bench, did not play the final 9 minutes. The coach said he tweaked something. So that doesn't look good for Quinn. And the first goal happens because Quinn turns the puck over in the offensive zone. And the next thing you know is an odd man rush going the other way.
Sorry, where are we here?
Yeah, Quinn Hughes gives up the puck in the offensive zone.
Yes.
And the Seattle Kraken get a chance going the other way. And that was started by Shane Wright.
Yeah, and Hronek had some good moments in this play here through the neutral zone, getting Quinn Hughes that puck. But he's under no pressure as he gets the entry, tries to thread a pass through, and he gets it there. But it's behind Pew Suter in the spot, and he doesn't handle it. And Shane Wright, I didn't think he looked a threat to shoot. And Philip Hronek still came over because he kind of took it to his backhand. It wasn't really looking at Lankinen, and the backhand sauce flips across to Burakovsky, cracking up 1-0.
Yeah, it wasn't the best play from Quinn, and the Seattle Kraken made it 1-0 in that instance. But the Canucks do come back and tie things up pretty quickly. And I thought, you know, overall, the Canucks did some good things in the first period. And this is one of their better moments. A relentless forecheck by Kiefer Sherwood. Nice support on the forecheck by Nils Höglander, and Pew Suter doing what Pew Suter does, being Johnny on the spot for a career-high 16th goal of the campaign.
Yeah, it's an unassisted goal, but Sherwood, Höglander deserve a ton of the credit here. You know, Sherwood chases Larson from the one side boards all the way to the other side, and Larson just got fed up with it and just gave the problem to Vince Dunn with the puck. He doesn't do it cleanly. Höglander jumps onto him, and that pass goes right into the slot, right to Pew Suter, and a quick shot inside the left dot, and the Canucks are back on evens.
Yeah, and the Canucks kept things going to make it 2-1, and this was another good play by the Canucks in the offensive zone, with Tyler Myers stepping in after a faceoff to get a shot that gets deflected, and Filip Hedl and some nifty stick work to get it around Joey Decord, who was committed to the shot that ended up getting blocked.
Yep, offensive zone faceoff, so the Canucks did have their own offensive zone they won faceoff one. Success here. And Myers' shot goes off the stick, and Hedl wins the draw, gets to the front of the net. Puck hits a stick, bounces perfectly for him, and Decord hadn't had a chance to react properly to now Hedl getting the puck. He's still looking for the first save, and he just outweighs him and buries it.
Yeah, so the first goal, you know, the turnover by Hughes, uncharacteristic. Next thing you know, it's back in the back of your net. And here is where the tipping started. And not the good type of tipping, because you did a good job and you got awarded for it. It's the type of tips that you get scored on, and that's what happened with Oliver Bjorkstrand. And just way too much time alone, Vic. I mean, you know, Quinn Hughes and Hronek get running around a little bit in their own zone, and Bjorkstrand has way too much time before Hronek even sees him to go and close, and comes over a bit slow, and next thing you know, the puck's in the back of your net.
And just in general, not enough focus, because it's chipped in on the entry.
Yeah.
Hughes isn't under pressure, and this goes to, hey, what physical capability did he have tonight? Did he not want to take on any sort of contact on retrievals? He sends the puck up the wall. Montour keeps it in. Eventually it goes back up the wall. Garland gets it. Montour closes on him quick. Mm-hmm. That puck gets kept in. There's a rebound, and Hedl picks it up, and he gets closed on really fast. Burakovsky takes it off of him, and we mentioned this. Hughes in the corner with Burakovsky, kind of weak on it. And Shane Wright just gets the puck, and it's time to spin around and pass it to the far point. And gets a pass to Montour. His shot tipped by Bjorkstrand, an unreal tip. But Hronek, you know, he came close to the corner when the puck was there. Shane Wright sends a pretty far pass, and Hronek has no level of urgency to get close to Bjorkstrand.
And Bjorkstrand just has enough time to just tip that puck in. And it's hard to blame Lankinen. And we can sit here and talk about some tips that going in. They're not just lucky tips through traffic that find a way in. Like, these are guys are standing there alone, have all the time in the world to tip a shot in, and that's what happens. And Bjorkstrand makes it 2-2. And the Canucks, again, like, hey, they fight back. They regain the lead. This is shorthanded this time. And Drew O'Connor has done a lot of great things with his speed. He does it here offensively, but he's also done a good job on the PK. And the Canucks PK has been lights out. It's been shooting up the standings. The top eight in the National Hockey League right now. Had another strong night here tonight overall. And the goal that was scored late was after the penalty expired. But great work from Drew O'Connor to spearhead this 2-on-1 in the first place.
Yeah, when McCann pulls up at the half wall on the entry, I think Drew O'Connor does a great job on his angle towards McCann to close the space, because his body positioning takes away the high pass to Kaapo Kakko. His stick positioning takes away kind of that spin pass into the bumper area. So McCann decides to spin back down the wall, but now by that time, yeah. Soucy is closed, because that's the trigger, right? You see the numbers, mm-hmm. guy looking to the wall, I'm going to go close the space. So when McCann spins back into it, he spins into trouble, and this puck gets knocked out to the top of the zone. Joshua's there, and Drew O'Connor activates quick too. So Joshua just hits the guy with speed, and then it's a 2-on-1 the whole way. Vince Dunn opens up the lane to Joshua, and what a take by Joshua. It's something we saw so often last year, those quick, tight hands yeah. in and around to the top of the crease. He lets that pass come to the far post, drawing DeCord that way, brings it back near post, and just tucks it in.
Yeah, it's a great, great move by Dakota Joshua. Some nice hands. He has been playing better recently. It's good to see him score, but that was as good as it got for the Canucks. A 3-2 lead that was wiped away 4 minutes later when Matty Beniers tied things up, and this happened after a face-off win by Matty Beniers against Elias Pettersson. And it's one thing to lose a face-off. It's another to let your guy get inside, and that's exactly what Pettersson lets Beniers do.
Beniers wins the faceoff, and Pettersson so far tonight, sorry, not so far, just through the night, was 41% on the draw, and I actually believe he had success against Beniers. Up until that moment, he was 0-for-2. Beniers was 0-for-2 against Pettersson, and then they ended up 50% against each other, 4-for-4. They each won 4. But this one, Beniers wins it clean. Pettersson just has eyes on the puck, watches Vince Dunn shoot, doesn't really move off the faceoff circle. Beniers tucks inside.
He's staring at the puck. I mean, three Canuck players are staring at the puck.
Joshua goes out to charge. Besser goes out to charge. The shot goes through both of them, and Beniers is able to send it to the other post, and Lankinen sliding one way, puck going the other way.
Hey, another typical, and here's a theme. Somebody in alone, not a lot of time, has all the time they want to tip a puck in, and that's exactly what Matty Beniers does to make it 3-2, to make it 3-3. And after that, coming up in the third period, Brandon Montour, later in the second period.
Tolvanen
made it 4-3 with, stop me if you heard this before, tipping another shot in front of the Canucks net.
Hughes tries going up the wall behind the net. His stick breaks. Stevenson comes up with it to the far point again. And as we mentioned, like Hughes from behind the net takes the guy closest to him. But Bluger was already engaged with him. So Bluger doesn't reposition quick enough.
Yeah.
And the shot from the point, I think from Evans, is nobody's out in front, and he tips it and sends it to the other post.
Yeah, that was the game-winning goal. Made it 4-3, but the goal that put this game out of reach happened in the third period, and it was Brandon Montour. We mentioned the Canucks' PK was strong, and this was just after the Elias Pettersson penalty had expired, and he stepped onto the ice. Brandon Montour steps into a puck and blows it past Kevin Lankinen, and that one just put this game away tonight.
Yeah, another entry moment here. Forbert's in a really weird spot for me on the entry.
Yeah.
He's right behind P.U. Suter, not covering up anyone.
Yeah, they're stacked close to each other, and they're both seating space.
Very compact, yeah. Right? And so McCann, I think it was McCann on the entry, he ends up taking a return pass as he gave it wide, and he just goes around the back of the net because he had so much space with speed and puts a backhand pass into the slot. Eberle doesn't connect onto it, but that puck goes all the way through to Brandon Montour, who has all the space to walk into because Pettersson hadn't come back into play yet from the box. He just hammered it low blocker side, and it's 5-3. Good night.
Yeah, and then Eli Tolvanen added an empty net goal to make it 6-3, and that was it for the evening for the Vancouver Canucks. Another tough loss. And, yeah, again, they did some good things, but, you know, some breakdowns. The coach did bemoan their lack of box outs and talked about losing some faceoffs and, you know, guys not doing the things they need to do in critical situations. And it ended up being a bit of a backbreaker here tonight for the Canucks. So a bit of a rough one for Vancouver. They come back home on Wednesday, take on the Anaheim Ducks. And it looks like, Big, they're practicing tomorrow as well. So the head coach is not letting them off the hook.
Yeah, that's the word, that tomorrow they'll be on the ice back in Vancouver.
All right, let's go to Seattle to find the man who can close this one out. We call him the triple threat. You watch him on TV, read him on digital, about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
must be some kind of
way out of here. I was just waiting for the lyric.
Yes. We're back to that lyric meaning everything again, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not surprised, actually, that they're practicing tomorrow because they have another 2 days before they play again. Plus, mm-hmm. they took Friday off after arriving in the very early hours from Anaheim. But, boy, oh, boy, this was a disappointing trip. The most amazing thing about it is that they're somehow still in a playoff spot, but they probably won't be by the time they play again on Wednesday. But what an erosion of form from the team that went into the February Four Nations break, 6-1-1. They just they've lost their way again, and you know there's some things they're obviously not doing well enough as a team. But again, at the moment, the way their top players are playing, and you know Quinn Hughes' injury, I'm sort of including in this, you know, concern about the top players, but the way their top players are playing, they don't have a chance long term. I mean, you have to get more from Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser than what they gave on this trip.
They don't have a chance short term either. Like, nothing's working right now, and you know, like,
yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, well, what recourse does Rick Tocchet have? Because there is no identity or anything to lean on right now.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think I would say short term, you can still win games. You can win some games when your top players, you know, aren't noticeable, but you can't. There's no long term success. Like, you can't do it for the final 21 games and think you're going to be a playoff team, would be my point. And, you know, they scored enough, you know, three goals on the road if they're better defensively. And there was some luck involved as well with all these tips that were finding openings behind Lankinen. But Seattle did take over the game. But the Canucks are just giving up too much right now as well. So even, you know, they got to, and Bick, I know you're not a fan of how they play when they win. How are you enjoying, you know, did you enjoy tonight's game, 6-3, and they lose? I'm being a bit facetious. I don't mean to pick on you. But this attitude previously about, well, okay, the Canucks are winning, but boy, it's boring. Well, I think most people would rather, for now, I'm not saying for the next 10 years, but for now, with the way this team is configured, I think if they were a little less boring, but were a lot more successful, most people would take that. It was a terrifically entertaining game tonight for a neutral. Lots of goals, mm-hmm. you know, deflections, two-on-ones. It's not the way that the Canucks are going to be successful playing.
And I think the real frustrating part about the game tonight, and you're right, it was entertaining. I mean, especially until the third period, and then a lot of similar feelings for Canucks fans, but it was entertaining and fun. But it was frustrating because they did a lot of good things early on, but then had so many critical back-breaking mistakes and missed assignments that left the Seattle players alone in front of their net that cost them the game here tonight.
Yeah, it's as Tocchet said, it's moments in a game. It's the who has, and the moments we tend to think of as the great, the positive, the glorious moments. Sometimes they're the inglorious moments. You know, the mistakes you make. The plays you don't make or the chances you don't finish that come back and haunt you as well. And I think there was a lot of that from the first 30 minutes because Vancouver was very good, but they didn't get enough out of it. And at the same time, they were still, when they gave up chances, they tended to be really, really good chances. And then, you know, the as I said before, Seattle just kind of took over the game. And I don't know what's going on with the Canucks in their heads, but to be the only team in the NHL that has not won a game yet this year when trailing after two periods, given the players' experience that they have, the coach, like there's really not a reason for them to be as overwhelmed and underperforming in the big moments as what they've seemed to be in a lot of games this season. And again, we're on this trip. You know, I haven't gone back. I didn't have time. But if you took the scores halfway through the game from what they ended up being, you know, the Canucks should have been able to get more out of this road trip than one win, especially given I know there were two back-to-backs, but given overall the level of opponents, and there were no easy outs. I mean, but, you know, they got beaten by three teams behind them in the standings. And, you know, at the when this season's post-mortem is done, whether it's in April, which on a night like this, it feels likely that they wouldn't be making the playoffs. But, you know, whenever it is, I think you're going to look back at this trip and it's either going to be, yeah, that was the one where, you know, they just left. They didn't get nearly enough out of it. And it ended up costing them, or it's going to be this trip was, you know, the blip on the radar. That's not the right cliche, but anyways, you know, the blip following the 6-1-1 roll that kind of got their attention and got them refocused. And we'll see if they get refocused and start playing a lot sounder, more reliable hockey. I mean, they did a lot of good things tonight, especially in that first period. You know, after what Tocchet said last game in Anaheim about them abandoning the game plan and not getting net front traffic and not getting middle drive and not and getting into a rush game. I mean, they did a lot of good things that way, but, you know, they put together a game, like play for 60 minutes and play in your own end as well. And so I don't know. I just have, it just feels like one way or another, we're going to look back at this trip where they went 1-4 coming out of the break after so much going into the break with so much positivity. And they come out on this 5-game trip with some winnable games, despite, you know, the back-to-backs. And they just didn't get anything out of it. And I think we're going to look back on this and see it either as the moment, like it got everybody's attention and got them refocused, or the moment where the team just started to slide away from the playoff spot and couldn't come back.
We've gotten a sentiment from a lot of fans, and it's not necessarily unfound, just because we've seen this team kind of experience this of, it feels like they're waiting for something to happen again. We know the trade deadline's 6 days away here on Friday, on March 7th. You've been with the team here on this trip. Is that something that you feel like you've experienced here, seeing these guys?
Well, I hope they're not waiting for something to happen, because I don't think there's no cavalry coming, right? Last year, leading up to the deadline, especially if you include the big trades that all being made early on for Zadorov and Lindholm, I mean, the team was definitely getting better. They were, you know, help was coming. A good team was getting even better. I don't think this team, this management is going out and getting a bunch of players to help for the final quarter of this season. There may be some hockey trades made where there's long-term ramifications, but I don't see them in the business of acquiring rentals and short-term help to give them a boost. So I hope the players on this team aren't waiting for that, because they're going to have to help themselves. Nobody's coming to save them. That said, on an individual basis, because these guys are human, which is something I often try to convey in my coverage, that these are people with a lot of the same worries and stresses about things that you and I have. I'm positive it's on Brock Besser's mind. I'm positive it's on Puse Suter's mind. I'm positive that there's all kinds of things in Elias Pettersson's mind right now, other than what he really needs to be focusing on. So, you know, in that way, yeah, it can be a difficult time of year, although in Pettersson's case, it's been a difficult 13 months. So I don't know where they go with him. But there isn't, to answer to your question, there's not help coming. Guys, if they're waiting for somebody else to come in and give the team a boost, well, I think they're going to be disappointed. The big trade was made when JT Miller was jettisoned. And we saw there was a bounce from that. And unfortunately, the NHL Four Nations break came along, and that stalled the team. And you could see that it had stalled the team. But it's not like we're in the second game back now. This is five games, and the team is still stalled. So clearly, they just whatever they had going before the break, they've lost it. And if they think that there's going to be a trade to help get them back, get that back, and get another bounce, they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, and I think the biggest question the Canucks have to answer by the deadline, will they answer by the deadline, is the future of Brock Besser.
Yeah, and you know, right now, what's the value of Brock Besser? What's his value to them versus other teams? Now, I think typically this management has not. I mean, last year was an out. For now, last year was an outlier, right? So the years before that, they did a pretty good job of harvesting some value from players that they could move. So I think that's probably the default mindset. But this has been such a strange season. Even with all that's happened, we still don't know which way, how it's going to end, other than it doesn't seem like it's going to end with a Stanley Cup. But we don't know whether this is going to be a playoff team or whether it's not. So I don't know. I can't make a call on Brock about whether he's going to be traded. Maybe it would have to do with the quality of offers that they get. Often at this time of year, you would just rather get something rather than nothing, which was a couple of the deals that the Canucks have made in the past. I don't know that Brock's a player that you just take something instead of nothing. I think maybe you would have to get something that you really want back in order not to keep him for the final quarter of the season, with the possibility that you could still extend him. I mean, Brock genuinely wants to stay. So when there is that attitude, if a player wants to be here, generally you find a way that he will be here. It's obviously incredibly risky to think that you can do that after the pressure point of the trade deadline passes, because it's now entirely up to the player, you know, what he wants to do. But again, in Brock's case, I think he's genuine and honest and wanting to play his career as a Canuck. So maybe he's the exception. Maybe he's the guy that you can keep. And especially if he gets going a little bit here, as a guy that you can still re-sign before July 1st. That's not my prediction. I'm just saying it's possible that with him and his situation, I think it's more possible to do that than with a lot of players who are going to be UFAs.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think there is a real chance he's still here by the deadline without being signed, but that doesn't mean he won't get signed if that happens. But still a lot that can happen between now and Friday. There's another Canucks game, and we'll see what that turns out for us, and that's going to be on Wednesday against the New York Islanders. And it feels like it's been forever ago, but we get to see you again in person on Wednesday.
Well, I'll look forward to that, guys. I'm coming home tomorrow. It has been a long road trip. I got to see Salt Lake City for the first time, and wasn't so bad. You know, mountains, pretty place, just in and out. But these were kind of good cities to be in, and there were some games there that I thought the Canucks would win that they didn't. But it's been a long trip. Jake DeBrusk told me he's looking forward to going home, and I think they're all that way. So maybe they get a little re-energized. They've been on the road a while, but we all know they got to be a lot better team at home than they were on the road if they're going to keep themselves in this playoff race.
Yeah, absolutely. And great stuff as always, Ian. Always summing it up well, and I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca and look forward to seeing you on Wednesday.
I will look forward to that as well. I miss you, Bic, no matter what you think, no matter how much I hurt your feelings sometimes, because you're so sensitive.
Trust me, I'm not. Have you heard what happened on the last post game show? I can assure you.
Oh, okay.
I'm not. Right. We'll talk about that on Wednesday.
You did play the ice cream music on me, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. That did happen. Fine. We might blame Eddie for that one, but we'll leave it at that for now. Thanks, Ian.
All right. See you guys.
Take care. That's Ian McIntyre, and you can check out his latest on sportsnet.ca. Thank you all for listening and participating. It's always a lot of fun. Wish we were talking about more victories, but maybe, just maybe, we do that on Wednesday after the Canucks take on the New York Islanders. Back at it on Canucks Central tomorrow. Bick is back. Not tomorrow, Monday. Bick is back on the People Show on Monday. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory, all of you for listening. This has been the Canucks Central postgame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.